Welcome to Talking in Stations, a podcast about EVE Online. I'm Adderall, and today we have on the panel, Carneros.
Good morning. It's great to be here.
Artemis.
Howdy, howdy.
Dirk McGurk.
Hey, good morning, everybody.
And today we're going to be talking about some security issues with Noisy Gamer.
Hello, everyone.
And of course, all of us and our guest, Billy, are going to talk about the war report, what's going on in the South, specifically. How are you doing, Billy?
Doing well, as always.
Great. Welcome back. All right. Let's actually start with the North. Artemis, you're probably most informed about this. You want to tell us what's going on up there?
Well, it's difficult to say. So we can start by putting this into a little bit of context, because I am personally very confused going into
okay,
this
maybe
war,
you're not all right
no we can talk about what is going on, but I think what is going on is super interesting when you look at how this war started, because from the inside, from the outset of the war, at least the general sentiment within MC was this war isn't going to last a month. North is going to get steamrolled, but that's fine. You got to fight for it anyway. It's content. But here we are, who knows how long later, and we've got Pure Blind is on fire. That makes sense, because when Horde moved out of Pure Blind, it was generally considered lost. Fade, on the other hand, I would love to hear from the boots on the ground from both sides as to what is going on with the Saw of Warfare and Fade. The fights I've been seeing are mostly Baltec fleets from the Imperium side, and then from the North side, you're seeing some Baltec fleets, although they're smaller, and then you're seeing a lot of Munins and a lot of Jackdaws and things like that. But generally speaking, the fights that I'm seeing, the North is losing, and yet when we look at the Sov map, when we look at destroyed structures and things, it's not quite as one-sided. You're not seeing as many things dying. So I am confused as to how those two things match up. Question to the panel. How does that work?
Well, it's funny because when we started our participation in the war, they told us specifically this is not going to be a short one. So it's kind of funny. We had the exact opposite expectations set. And I don't think that sovereignty is our goal. At least, no, I haven't heard that stated.
Like none of the grindy fleets, the Entosis, you know, Sov wanding fleets, that I've been on, have I seen us gone after TCUs, right? So like nothing would change in terms of that sovereignty map.
Unless you're going through and looking at iHubs, seeing not as many iHubs gone as I would expect to see, or not even as many iHubs flipped to reset the strategic index as I would expect to see.
Let me just update the show. We have Killer B with us now. Let's somebody unmute him or make sure he's not muted.
Good morning. Or good afternoon, Killer.
And he is actually in Iceland right now doing the CSM summit. So we're glad to have him on the show, because he can give us an update on both those things. Let's make sure he's unmuted. There, he should be good.
Hello?
Now.
Hello?
How are you doing?
Can you see me?
We can hear you. Yeah.
Perfect. Morning. Good afternoon.
Hey, what's up?
You just came back from fishing, right? Something like that?
Yeah, we did the CSM team building trip with some of the CCP dudes. We went out for some deep sea fishing. It was pretty fun.
Were actually fishing. It wasn't just that you were out on a boat ride. Oh, okay.
No. We were actually fishing. We caught caught loads of fish as well. And they actually prepared the fish right on the boat for us on the way back, basically. So that was the freshest fish I've ever had, obviously. Because we pretty much caught it out of the ocean, and then they prepped it for us and they grilled it, and with some lime and some salt and pepper, was really, really good.
I want you to know those limes probably came from Southern Europe or North Africa by boat.
Really expensive limes.
Yes.
All right. Killer B, we were just talking about the North and trying to get an update on what's going on up there, because it seems like the war has slowed down up in the North.
Yeah, it has a lot. I mean, it's a very boring phase of the war. In my opinion, it's mostly just back and forth. Sovereignty timers, both, you know, goons keep hitting key iHubs. We keep showing up to defend them. And we defend them pretty well most of the time. The other night, we managed to defend one because the node died because Progod bombed the entire Dead Coalition Megatron fleet to death. And apparently that was too much for the node. And that's obviously all of the enemy fleets and all of our fleets were stuck in DO6 because of that. And then the IHUB was saved without much resistance. And that's kind of just the everyday stuff now. There's constant timers going on and constantly people forming. Unfortunately, not as many skirmishes as one would hope, because obviously it's a lot of standing down, a lot of blue bowling going on both sides. It's a very, very boring and slow part of the war at the moment.
Well, I think it's kind of interesting. I mean, it's better than a steamroller kind of coming through and rolling over everything, is it?
Yeah, I mean, it's better than getting steamrolled for sure, but it's also not very fun for most of the players anyways. There's some good fights, don't get me wrong, you know. The thing is, and that's obviously nothing new to EVE, out of 10 form-ups, you get like 2 fights, right? And that's obviously very frustrating to the general member base when they form up 10 times per week and they only get a fight once or twice. It's a little bit annoying, but that's just war, and most of the veterans in NCDOT especially, and I hope in our allied alliances as well, obviously know that that's how war goes, and we're all still fighting, we're all still forming.
Yeah. I was in a small fleet, and we formed up, we were getting excited about fight, a couple hundred people fighting in small ships, and they said, they posted a kill board, and it said that 2 PL battleships had smart bombed the entire Goon Swarm fleet to death. So they were not coming, and that was the end of that. So it was a small little fight.
There are exceptional fights in between in this, things that don't match the rest of the patterns. I was in one Ishtar fleet the other night, and I think there were about 80 in our fleet and 160 in the other fleet, and they were in it was either Munins or Serbs, but it was assault cruiser versus assault cruiser, 2-1 odds. We didn't win, but it was fun for a moment.
Is there a reason to chat us in subscriber only mode, by the way?
No, shouldn't be a reason.
I bet it's a leftover from the meta show.
Yep.
All right.
We'll see if we can. McCloud will do his magic.
But yeah, I mean, it's not a speedy war. I don't know. You know, kind of with what Killer was saying there, right? You know, he's like it's kind of long and grindy, which people aren't liking. And then it's not also a steamroller, which obviously one side wouldn't like if it was a steamroller, right? I don't know. I mean, I've been looking at this and kind of thinking that with the way that things are locked down in terms of Sino jamming and things, right? That's obviously stalling the ability to have a steamroller effect, right? That you can't just have, Titans online go at everything and just be done with it in a shorter period of time. Even though people don't really enjoy Aegis sovereignty, let me be nice about Aegis sovereignty, they don't really enjoy it. Like it seems to kind of have a place when what the other side of that could be is just massive capital fleets just running through and pillaging an entire area, right?
Part of the problem that's not really being talked about as well, though, is that it's not just the Aegis Sov defending and the Sinojammers. It's also the time zone tank as well, right? It plays a big factor in the way this is all kind of working out.
Which side is setting timers to which time zone?
The North has basically everything set to Australian time zone, as far as I'm
concerned. So, like,
Goons have most of their stuff to US TZ, especially in Delph.
Yeah.
Okay. That's interesting. I would like to pose a question, especially now that we have both Killa and Billy in here. We're seeing Sov being much, or ground being much more easily taken in pure blind. Do we anticipate the possibility of a pivot in focus once pure blind is cleared out from fade to possibly tribute? Once a path is cleared, purely speculative at this moment, but do we think that's possible or reasonable in any sense?
Once fate is cleared?
Once pure blind is cleared. Because yeah, but pure blind is,
nobody cares about, right?
Well, yeah, anymore. But it's a path to tribute. At least possibly it's a path to tribute. Do you think it would be used as such?
Unfortunately, although it may be a path on Dotland, it doesn't quite work like that geographically, yeah. Like in terms of the geography of jump ranges. For them to extend towards Tribute would effectively cause them to go basically through some really tricky points. It doesn't work well, unfortunately.
Okay. So like, then
pure blind attribute is, it's kind of like you got a mountain range of like jump ranges that just don't, it's difficult to traverse kind of thing.
Gotcha. So then what happens when pure blind gets cleared out? Is it just, it's right next to where the fighting's currently happening. So it is getting in fights there, clearing out hostile strong points, and then it's just going to be a wasteland. Is that what we're thinking then?
It's already a wasteland.
Yeah, it has been a wasteland for fucking ever. Pureblind has never really been flourishing. Well, nobody's focused on Pureblind at the moment, so I don't really understand why you're bringing it up.
So basically, right now the situation is fire. If you
look, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, like Pureblind is irrelevant to this discussion, like 100%. Like even the 7x Keepstar is basically irrelevant. Nobody cares about it.
Yeah,
like.
Exactly. It's like you put some random piece of like forest on fire that nobody gives a shit about. You're like, oh, let's talk about this piece of wood because it's on fire. It's like pure blind has no strategic relevance whatsoever. Almost no strategic relevance.
Yeah, everything. It has a little because of the NPC stations mostly, actually.
Yeah, but that's it.
But like the core reality of the situation is that like the Imperium forces are staged kind of in like a southwestern position. And, you know, the pure blind operate kind of encompasses like just a south. It doesn't really encompass like a southeast. It's hard to explain it properly, but basically like unless the Imperium is looking to fully forward restage into like X7 or ROYR and really change the dynamics of the jump ranges, then Pureblind is 100% irrelevant. And even if they did that restage, their primary focus would still be the same core systems and fade, which is, you know, funny enough. It would open up Tribute a little bit, but not all that much, to more than subcap harassment.
So then it is being shot purely for content.
Well, no, it's the strategic goal.
I thought there was no strategic goal.
Okay, like you look for things to do when you don't have, you know, like you can't chew through ADM 6 timers 24/7. It's not sustainable. You look for, you know, the low-hanging fruit to kind of keep yourself fed a little bit, and you burn it casually.
Is there more low-hanging fruit that is accessible once pure blind is gone?
It's a good question.
Or will it be just more now you actually have to grind through ADM6?
Well, if you look at pure blind,
you're asking us for like future predictions, and it's so
absolutely
funny.
I
know it's very funny to talk about that stuff, but it makes absolutely no sense. Like that's why I generally avoid goblins. Like if you wanna do a show where you just rant about predictions of the future, get goblins in here. Get somebody like Xdeath in here. Those are the people that love doing that kind of stuff. But I generally face the problems that are in front of me, especially since in Eve you can't, like, it's pretty much worthless to plan more than 3, 4, 5 weeks ahead, because the way things shift rapidly, the way things happen in EVE, you never know what the next patch is going to bring. You never know who's going to attack who suddenly for whatever reason. And that's why it's pointless to make plans and assume what could goons do if this happens. And then because of that, we do this. And then because of that, they do that. It's just a waste of time. It's just putting a lot of like brain effort into something that you can't control. So,
and unfortunately, all this dynamic is kind of based on the assumption that goons continue to have nobody to take the space too, right? You know, let's say exactly. You know, a half decent alliance comes into left field, and all of a sudden they've got somebody interested in living in pure blind.
That changes, and then that changes things a lot. Yeah.
Well, right? They did. Should we talk about that? They had somebody that was ready to go into fade.
It was who?
It was the Seventh Estate Yintan's alliance.
Yeah. Okay.
They were tiny.
The Seventh Pyre.
I tried to find them some space in Amancia Tenerifus just as we were starting to get invaded, and they never formed more than 30 or 40 dudes, like, ever. That's not like a, how do I put this? It's not the kind of entity that's really going to affect anything in the scheme of this level of war.
Oh, but isn't
Madro, we can't hear you, bro.
All right. I'll just work the chat.
See, okay. Until a moment like that, after it happens, then like you're completely clear apologizing for it.
Yeah. Okay, yeah, so there's a slow burn going on in the north. There are exceptional fleets in between on things. Some of the time it's focused on wars. Some of the times it's focused on things like hot dropping Rorquals or whatever. It's not, which, you know, in some ways is slightly related to the war, and in other ways is a change of pace for what kind of fleet you're flying in. But it seems to be quiet now in the south, so not much to talk about there.
Well, right until Fraternity just anchored a Keepstar, if Reddit is to be trusted.
I think that, I want to go back to that real quick, if okay. I think that dropping Rorquals is strategically more relevant than most of the IHUPs that could possibly be killed. Because the entire point of this deployment, the entire point of this war that we're fighting in the North currently, besides PvP content for everybody, of course, thank you, Goons, for that, is, of course, to harass and disrupt the Northern industry. And they're, you know, credit where credit is due. They have done a very effective job at that. There was a time when Decline was the second biggest industry in EVE after Delph, right? It was like a couple of months ago before all of this started, before the Reaver deployment started by Asher. Decline was the second strongest economy in the game. And to that, together with all the other Northern region, we did have a lot of economy on our side. And now that is pretty much all gone, right? And that's strategically very important. So obviously not necessarily that, you know, that one renter Rorqual that gets dropped isn't going to change the course of the war, but in general, the fact that Rorqual dropping is happening, the fact that Rorquals are dying, you know, the people that do mine, they don't feel safe. And that obviously disrupts the Northern industry a lot. And that's a perfectly valid strategic move to make, and it's working out pretty well for them.
Yeah, like to kind of further expand on what Kill is saying, like the phase one of this war was, you know, the Southern attack on Legacy in the south and the Imperium response up north. And that phase of the war is effectively over. All the Southern entities have basically, disbanded, pulled back, aside from Fraternity. And the Southern War is effectively over, and because the Southern War is effectively over, the goal of the Northern attack, which was to kind of peel pressure off of the South, was also successful. So now we're in kind of a second phase where it's like the Imperium is here and they're looking for stuff to do because, well, shit, you know, there was so much blood in the water, so much weakness shown. They're like, well, let's see what else we can do. What else can we get away with? This is awesome. You know, so it's not like this war is really operating on a clear axis at the moment, because the stated goals of everything that's happened has already been accomplished.
Let's talk a bit more about what's going on in the South, Philly. Can you walk us through? Because it seemed like there was a lot of activity. UALX happened. People expected the momentum to shift the other way, and it did. But then things just sort of petered out. Could you walk us through 2 weeks in the past to present? What happened?
So after UALX, PL and Skill Yourself and Triumvirate and NC Dot and Lumpy and Fraternity and everybody in that kind of coalition were basically just hard demoralized. Like the loss in the battle and then the 5-day camp, even though they, you know, have some great memes about, you know, escape from prison UALX and stuff, it just like absolutely demolished the identity of the Eastern Bloc and the confidence in all the smaller alliances, in the big alliances, and the big alliances, the small alliances. Like, it just killed the cohesion of the that bloc. So after ULX, they basically couldn't attack together anymore. So it came a situation where we had all the momentum, but we didn't go out and create any offensive timers because we didn't want to give them anything to unify on. So we played it really slow and like annoying, and we just didn't give them any easy defensive battles. And sooner or later, as expected, you know, all of a sudden they can't work together. Skill Yourself kind of bleed. Was Skill Yourself the first to leave? I think they were. Skill Yourself left shortly after. No. Well, PL pulled their Super Titans up for the X-47 battle, which left all the rest really weak. And then, you know, shortly after Skill Yourself pulled out, shortly after that, Triumvirate pulled out. Black Legion has went back up north for the most part, And that's really only left at this point, Fraternity and the Tenerifus trio. And we're kind of like, after ULX, we just kind of tell the guys to go back to Esoteria, like lock down that region, give guys a chance to, you know, make some money, repair the losses, et cetera. And we've been putting light pressure on Tenerifus while we do that, which is, you know, once you let the guys loose, they just can't help themselves. They want to entosis everything, reinforce everything. And you're like, no, slow down, guys. We're just taking it easy. And then like, kill, murder. You can't stop them. But even still, it's been pretty slow paced. And we're just slowly chewing through Tenerifus bit by bit. And at the same time, giving XIX an opportunity to retake some of their stuff or some of their soon to be their stuff. And that's kind of just been the status of the war in the South at the moment.
So the South is still, and I mean, this is kind of where this whole sort of two front war began, right? I mean, it began down there, and then when Imperium decided that they were going to actively deploy to the north, that created the second, you know, the true second front. But then it just seemed like after that the first front kind of stalled up. That is an active theater, though. I mean, there are operations going on both sides down there.
Sort of like. It's only Fraternity left, right? Like, and Fraternity has no power to do anything outside of Asia time zone. Like, Black Legion, you know, was here for a week, and we were like, they did some stuff with Munins and harassment, but you know, we clamped down on that pretty hard too. And so really, it's literally only Fraternity and a trio of Tenerifus alliances. And like, yes, in theory, there's still a war going on, but it doesn't really feel like one. It feels like a cleanup operation where we're just sweeping the broom left and right, getting ready to kind of go after the big pile of dust, I guess you could say.
Now, what is this keep star that Fraternity has just anchored, and how relevant is that to what's going on down there?
So this morning, Fraternity anchored a keep star in 4-6 Delta Papa at 1200 EVE time. It is a I guess you would call it a regional gate keep star. So it's, you put it on the in-gate of a large regional gate so that you can kind of provide some security as you traverse that regional gate, and it goes right into Detroit. We're planning on going to try and kill it tomorrow morning, so it should be an interesting situation. We'll see what happens. Obviously, it's got some interesting ranges, and it's a logistical nightmare for both sides in reality. So we'll see how it all kind of turns out, but I'm pretty confident that we should be able to kill it, but you know, anything can happen. So
is that coming out? Well, okay. So number one, that's Labor Day weekend here in there. Labor Day.
Yes. They did not realize that when they anchored it, I'm sure.
But is that coming out in an obscure time zone, or is it coming out in
1200 EVE is Asia time zone, which is like the most obscure time zone in EVE for everybody that's not Chinese. But, you know, it's also Labor Day weekend, which means, thank you, we can, you know, ask people to take the day off work because, shocker, they've already got the day off work.
Isn't that, like, super early in the morning West Coast still?
Oh, yeah, it's fucking terrible. It's like, I've got to wake up at, like, 6 a.m., so I don't even want to think about what it's like for the West Coast guys. But, you know, it is what it is, right? Like, it's horrible.
Could have been Tuesday and then really made it bad, but.
Well, honestly, it's funny because the very first large-scale battle we had with Fraternity was also a holiday, and they forgot about it as well, and they're like, oh, that was a mistake. We shouldn't have anchored it on a holiday. And it, you know, it cost them 300 or 400 or 500 billion or whatever it was in QE TAC. And now they've done a mistake and anchored it on a holiday again, so we'll see how it goes.
All right. Killa, you got anything more to add on the ongoing hostilities throughout where you're active?
Was that for me? Sorry.
Yeah.
I was lagging a bit. I think so. I'm really happy that, sorry, one sec. I'm really happy that the content that's going on right now is more new FC friendly. So we've had a couple of new FC step up in NC Dot, which I'm personally very happy about because that means I can do a little bit less myself. So that's good. And they're gaining experience, which is very nice. So I'm hoping that this phase of the war goes on for a little longer because it gives a lot of newer people the chance to grow a bit. And I think there is
very fun and good fights to be had on a pretty much daily basis. It just takes, you know, the right people to make the right moves. But there's at least the chance. There's pretty much goon fleets in Fate in the area every single day that kind of just, you know, somebody needs to form for and then actually get a fight out of it. But there is the opportunity to get a fight. So that, I like that. And I'm excited to see where it goes.
Are you authorized to engage in diplomatic activities while at the CSM summit? And how close will you be sitting to Aerith?
Aerith and I get along very, very fine today. We did our team building thing today, so we haven't actually had any sessions. But yeah, I like Aerith a lot. He's a cool guy. And I don't know if I'm going to do any diplomatic talk because I don't think there's much to be talked about, really. I don't think there's any way that any kind of agreement, because all the agreements I could think of that goons would ask of NCDOT, we're not going to do, right? Because it's probably going to involve us abandoning our allies or some shit. And that's not going to happen. So I don't think there's going to be much diplomatic talk. I think it's mostly just going to be, you know, heck, like a little bit of hazing each other. Aerith already said with Merkel and Nominate, they were like going to haze me tonight. So I'm looking forward to that. We'll see what they throw at me. Should be fun. It's been a good time so far.
Yeah, but you can probably drink them under the table, right?
I don't know. So Merc seems like he can drink a lot. I don't know about Aerith. I don't know about him. But yeah, Merc is scary. I think Merc can drink a lot.
So, you know, while we're, you know, we'll transition off of kind of the war. But, you know, while we got you talking here, you said you guys were doing some sort of team building exercise or whatever it was, which is, you know, going out in a boat and fishing, and then you got to eat fish and whatnot. But how is the week looking forward? I don't know that I've yet seen an agenda of topics. I thought they normally release that prior to, you know, release it to the public, what the agenda of topics is going to be. How are you feeling about what you know this week is going to look like?
It's a very packed week. We have literally sessions from Monday through Friday, pretty much from the morning to the afternoon. So there's a lot of meetings. There's some very important key meetings in there that I think are very important, and I hope that we can achieve something. But of course, it's also my first CSM summit, so I really don't know what to expect. I'll be quite honest. I don't know how these meetings go down. I don't really know, you know, what kind of like how they run it and stuff. But I'm definitely looking forward to it, and I'm very happy to meet some of the teams and, you know, get the chance to talk about something that might be an issue at the moment.
Well, they'll have an agenda, and they'll have different time slots for different teams, and each team will come in and they'll say a couple words to you about who's going to present and what they want to talk about for their section, and then they'll go through it, and you know, there'll be plenty of time for them to listen to you.
Yeah, that sounds really good. I mean, so far what I've heard so far yesterday evening, I was just drinking with a couple of CSM people, and like I said, today on our team building thing, that was really fun as well. We all had a bunch of beer, and you know, we're fishing and beer, nothing can really go wrong. And we went to the super, like that place we went fishing as well was, I don't know if like what they did, but we caught fish every minute. Like it was ridiculous, and it was big fish too. So it was really fun. And yeah, we got talking a bit, and we talked about, you know, how this is usually going to go down. It was fun. I think we can achieve something.
Now, I remember last year, you weren't there, but Sword Dragon was, and you said that he did a good job representing kind of some of the FC voices within your Blue Donut channel or whatever that thing is called. Have you been coordinating with him this year on similar issues?
With Sword?
Yeah.
So we did a Blue Donut, which is that FC channel that all the bigger FCs are in on Discord. We had sort of like a Blue Donut town hall about 2 weeks ago, where we had all of like a whole bunch of FCs. Vili was there as well, and you know, a bunch of Goon FCs. Jay was there, Asher was there, I think Thomas was there, and actually Asher wasn't there, but Thomas was and Jay. And we had we sort of, you know, collected some feedback, some data from those, from, you know, from the key content. And you know, this is subjective. So I call them the key content creators of the game. I'm well aware that there's content creators out there that are not in the blue donut, and I'm sure you guys do a fantastic job as well. But for me, those people are the key content creators. And we got some really good feedback there, I think. And obviously, we're gonna take all that and try to make something happen. But yeah, I don't really know what the feedback we gathered is going to translate into, stuff actually happening.
Are there any current CSM members who are not making it to this summit this year that you know?
No, everybody's here. Everybody's here.
That's good.
And by now it's 7 goons, right? Because Jintan is in goons now, I think. Sutonia, I think, is in goons or is going back to goons. Yeah, so basically it's like 7 Imperium aligned CSM members, and then we have 3, which is Sword Dragon, Steve Renukin, and me, who are not. So it's obviously, you know, we're fighting an upward battle. But actually, and that's something that I think a lot of people tend to forget as well, while we obviously, like, you know, that every CSM member thinks about the interests of their alliance, but we also all have the same goal of, you know, just trying to get at least a little bit of improvement on EVE, if it's possible at all. So we do obviously work together as well. It's not like it's me and Sword arguing versus Aris and, you know, all the other Imperium CSM members. We do have things that we all agree on that we will bring forward to CCP, and that goes beyond alliance politics pretty much. At that point, it's just, you know, what we want to achieve as a CSM, pretty much.
Yeah, I would definitely like to hear your feedback after this summit, because there are people out there that think that just, you know, because of tribal affiliation, right, that they're representing tribes as opposed to, you know, the broader game in general. So given that this is your first, I'm going to want to hear it from Brisk as well as to whether or not he had any sense of that, because it's always been kind of, the idea that that's not really how it goes down, that, you know, Aerith may talk the way he does publicly, but when sitting at the table and actually discussing issues, it's for the better health of the game, not just a my tribe kind of thing, you know, or other, you know, others as well.
When CCP drops something completely new on you, you don't react as a member of your tribe. You react as an EVE player. Won't be a problem.
But yeah, so great. I don't know. What do we want to move on to now, unless we've got anything more about the summit? I mean, obviously, the summit hasn't happened yet. You know, we'll be looking forward to seeing what comes out in the minutes and, discuss that sort of thing. But that's for another week.
Yeah, I was going to.
Where's the drinking tonight? Killer B, where's the drinking tonight in Reykjavik?
That's a good question. We haven't decided yet. After I'm done here, I'm gonna head down to we're in a really nice hotel this year, and it has a really nice hotel bar, so we're probably gonna hang out in the hotel bar for a bit, and then we are going to get some dinner later at like 7 p.m. Eve time with the group, and then we'll go from there. Probably we haven't set a location yet at which we're gonna drink.
Okay, have fun.
Thank you.
So you mentioned the minutes, Dirk, and our next topic, unfortunately, we won't be able to look to the minutes much to find out what CCP is thinking on it, because it's almost always NDA'd, and that's security, for obvious reasons. They don't usually have information about the minute or about it in the minutes, and we've got Noisy here to talk about things that have been going on with EVE security. We recently had the Q3 security briefing, if you will, that was put out in a dev blog form. So Noisy, can we, going from the reference point of that Q3 dev blog, walk us through what's been happening with like the security of EVE?
Okay. First, I want to bring up something that was like really cute, and that is that they actually had a lore news item that brought up all of the complaints from our EVE and the EVE Online forums complaining about, you know, the GMs and ISD and team security and how they're bad and they're not transparent and everything like that. And that was voiced by the Sisters of EVE. And then the next day is when the security dev blog dropped. So I thought that was like kind of cute because it's the first time they've done that.
So looking at the dev blog itself, I pulled up the Q2 dev blog, And I think it is very easy for people to be drawn to the numbers that have been posted for number of accounts banned for various things. And just about across the board, it looks like the majority of accounts banned have been essentially cut in half for each of the three categories, be it banned for RMT, banned for botting, or banned for account hacking. Do you think this is because just we're running out of accounts to ban? Is that just lower activity in the summer? Do you think it's bad to look at those metrics and try and draw those sort of conclusions? What are your thoughts on that?
Well, if you see a lack of, let's take, for instance, the account hacking bans. Basically, that's not these people were hacking and therefore they're bad. This is hackers got into their accounts, and so CCP bans their accounts so they can't be stripped or used for botting or anything like that. And so if you see a decrease there, then that means that maybe efforts like getting people to use two-factor authentication and in particular the new thing that they did with when you log in, if your ID password combination it has been hacked on a previous on another site, it comes up and it warns you, hey, you know you're at greater risk of getting hacked because you know this information's out there. So that shows that maybe that is helping out there. So that's a positive thing. The part about the botting related activities could be because of lesser activities. But usually not. What might be happening is that because of wars, that it's not safe for people to bot, and so therefore, if they can't bot, then they can't get caught. So war in Eve is a double-edged sword for the RMT ISK sellers. It produces demand for their product. Because you'll see the demand for RMT ISK go up, but then because the war's out there and people are like DBRB and his initiative with AFK camping or Cloakie camping, then they can't. It's not safe for them to bot. So you have that going on.
I'm glad you brought up the RMT because they're further down in this quarter three dev blog, the security team talks about they're taking a new initiative to take the fight to the RMTers. They're looking to shut down sort of the point of sale, the websites they're using, social media they're using, catch them that way. Is this a relatively new thing that we're seeing? Or are they just bringing it up now to highlight it to fill the dev blog? What's the deal with that?
I think they go in phases. Also, I think it depends on their lawyer's availability because they have to get the legal team involved a lot of times in order to put pressure on ISPs or hosting providers in order to say, hey, knock this off and issue letters and things like that. However, over the last couple months, I go to I visit some of the ISK selling sites. There's 3 to 5 over the last couple of months that Malwarebytes now declares their scam sites or they've got malware on them and things like that. And so that could be CCP going to places like Malwarebytes and letting them know, hey, these are scam sites. They're doing bad things and put them on the list. And so they're getting blacklisted by some of these places.
Gotcha. Now, there's one final thing in this devlog that jumped out to me personally, and I think Killa, you're going to be the only one in this room who can really go in depth with it with CCP, and that's talking about their policy updates. They're looking at how they're handling in-game harassment, antisocial behavior, and real-life threats. And specifically, they mentioned that they're going to be involving some internal clarification on how to handle things. And I suspect this is going to be probably a major topic, or I'd hope it's a major topic that comes out in any sort of team security meeting we have at this CSM summit. What are our thoughts for the entire panel on how CCP is handling in-game harassment, real-life threats, things like that, and if there's room for improvement with it?
Well, there was a news article this week where was it Polygon sent out a request to a bunch of game companies asking for an official statement of their harassment policy. One game company gave them a meaningful, detailed response, and that was CCP. And I was proud when I saw that. Is that a link to it? Well played, Artemis. So. Well played, Artemis. Okay, so there you go. I imagine this subject will come up. Now, the summit obviously doesn't really start till tomorrow, although I would argue that the drinking in the evenings is a valid part of the summit as well, and so it starts tonight. Wink, wink. But I would say this will probably come up in your meetings, Killaby.
Yeah, especially if they are going to be making changes, or updates to the code of conduct, right? I think that ever since CCP announced that they were joining, and Noisy, help me out with the name here.
The Fair Play Alliance.
The Fair Play Alliance. I think that we have begun to see some changes on their behalf. So therefore, I wouldn't to where they're taking a much more stringent view of some of these things, right? And I wouldn't be surprised to see changes in the code of conduct and things along those lines as they begin to flesh out a heavier oversight of that area.
And that's what kind of like why I brought up that lore news article, because a lot of times if CCP is going to be introducing something major, they will also make it part of the lore. And all of us, and so now, like, for the first time, we're seeing greater information, possibly what's the EVE code of conduct, changes there, the botting and everything like that. They're actually putting it into the lore, which makes it a little bit more important.
I think it's great when a game company can reinforce key messages in their lore as well. Well played.
I mean, obviously, the code of conduct, and much of what CCP does deals specifically with in-game, right? But I think that, really, when you look at that Polygon article, right, or a lot of the other things that are going on out there, it's wait a second. What you do in your game is one thing, but remember that there are also things that touch your game, just with social media and everything else, that also affect these. And you're beginning to see, you're beginning to see more of kind of a you've also got to look at that too if you are seriously committed to these things.
Yeah, and this isn't like something new. A few years back, SOE was starting to make noises about, hey, we need to crack down on activity, on toxic activity in our community towards our employees. And since then, it's just kind of snowballed gradually. And now we're actually seeing, the industry itself saying, hey, we need to actually crack down on this. We can't let this go anymore.
And it's a fine line for them, right? Because it's very difficult to try and police things that are happening outside of places where they can't absolutely, tie it to the game, right? And I mean, a lot of that can go back to I think a first attempt really was back during the Erotica One type stuff, where they had some words back then about hey, look, we will look outside the game and things like that. But I think that was kind of a fits and starts sort of attempt at it. But again, with the things that are going on out there in the broader gaming industry and just kind of changes the evolution of how you deal with these things related to the broader internet, right? It won't surprise me to see CCP, try and say, hey, look, we've got to look at more than just what happens in local chat. Although that is definitely the first place that they need to be looking, right, is inside their game. They got to make sure inside their game is as clean as it can be to the standards that they want to uphold before they then begin to go out and make an attempt at policing something on the outside, which is quite difficult.
I fully agree with the initiative. It's just, I'm going to have to be really careful as to this. They have to enforce whatever policy they decide on brutally evenly. The incident with Creature on the CSM, we all know there was significant incidents of equivalent nature by many of the other CSM candidates. And if this ends up being a situation where they go out of game for people, it will especially when you're dealing with certain entities which have spy networks, which can read other alliances' back channels and other alliances don't, kind of thing. It poses a real danger to kind of, how do I put this?
It can be metagamed, is what you're trying to say, yeah?
Yeah, it can be metagamed and very, very dangerously.
I am also quite skeptical, or not necessarily skeptical, concerned about how this could go in the future. I know that, one, I enjoy playing Overwatch, and Overwatch has had significant efforts put into making their game and their community less toxic, because it was seen as a serious detriment to the game's survival, the game's health. EVE Online, I think, is a counterpoint to that. Whereas for a long period of time, one of the selling points of EVE Online, one of the things which made it notable and unique, was how lawless it was how little control CCP exerted over, not necessarily that they had, but how much control, how much meddling they did in the actions of the players. And if CCP is looking to change that, I'm interested in, with the player base that remains and the player base that may or may not be gained in the future, how does this impact that?
I think we're jumping ahead there.
Yeah,
I don't think they're changing the culture of EVE.
But has the culture of EVE changed, whether or not they...
Culture of EVE has already changed. The question is how hard... And it will continue to change with the natural changes that we're seeing in the culture of Western culture today. The question is how quick CCP is going to push for the alignment of EVE culture with pop culture.
There's one final thing I wanted to talk about with this security update, and that was it came in the wake of GM Week. We have a newly named GM, GM Socket Close, bunch of other fan activities. As far as I'm concerned, and I think as far as the majority of the community is concerned, this GM Week was a rousing success. And one of the things they did was they teleported botters in shiny ships, mostly supers, one Titan, couple of carriers, into Uli and had them killed. This was the spark that led to the lore piece from the Sisters of EVE. It was a major portion of that. What are the panel and guests' opinions on this? Do you like it? Do you not like it? Do you think it is totally irrelevant? What are your thoughts?
I think it's good as long as there's no false positives. As soon as there's one single false positive that gets executed in Uli, they're going to have a problem. As long as they can avoid that, I like it.
Yeah, I would agree as well, because I think there was like one test carrier that was sent there too, and like, you know, we permabanned the guy instantly, right? Like, you know, you're basically taking someone's in-game name and saying you are this, and if you are risking a false positive with that, it's a pretty major thing to have happen to somebody.
Apparently, supposedly the people that were teleported to Uli, right, and allowed to be, you know, fed to the lions there, were people that they were absolutely sure, right? Like, these weren't people that were, you know, just sort of initially under investigation, or somebody had just clicked a report a bot or something along those lines, right? These are people who had already gone through the process to have a second strike. Right?
Yeah, but like, what was the scoop on that Titan? Like, it wasn't a
That's the one that I have a question about.
Well, exactly, right? Like, there shouldn't be any questions here, and that's the concerns me.
I have a question about it from this angle. Not that they weren't marked for death, right? Not that they weren't marked for being thrown into the Colosseum, right? But how exactly did it go down at the time? And this really goes for any of those ships that were teleported there, right? Were they actually online and botting at the time? Had they been marked for death earlier? Were they even online at the time, or did CCP kind of spawn them in there for display and you know, then ban them, sort of a thing? So like, there are certain questions there, because that Titan seemed really odd. Like, that Titan didn't seem like a ratting Titan.
I'm going to guess that okay, so if your account gets permanently banned, and I'm going to guess that all of those accounts were for permanent bans, they may not have been botters, they may have been RMTers, and they may have been selling stuff, and it could be that there was an exchange going on, and they grabbed it, or they had seen the exchange go on, somebody bought a Titan with real-life money, or maybe he was doing something else. And so that's why he got teleported in. I'm going to guess that they were probably online at the time. I'm not sure.
Isn't it also the case that CCP does these bans sort of in waves? And so if you were caught botting, RMTing, whatever, between the last wave and this one, you may not have been botting at the moment when you were banned, but if you've been caught botting any time previously since the previous wave, then you were banned in this wave. Or is that not how it works?
The RMT bans work that way. Just because you can't just like, you know, set off something automatic and you go ahead and you snap your fingers and they're banned. So it takes a while to do the investigation, and it appears that it happens about once a month, depending on whether Pellegros gets sick or he's on vacation. It could take a little bit longer. If they have something drop in their lap, it might happen faster, but yeah, it happens about once a month, once every 4, 5, 6 weeks.
I mean, you know, I just want to go back, you know, to kind of like the public display, right? You know, the public display of executing. I think generally the feeling is that, you know what, this is right. Okay. I kind of don't like, and I've said this before, I kind of don't like the fact that there is a small subset that is basically named and shamed, okay, which I think everybody is just fine with naming and shaming. But when you've got 3,388 account bans for botting related activities in this current period, and all we know about is, I don't know what, 15, 16 of them, and the names of them and their affiliations in the game, I want to know the names of the other ones. I want to know the affiliations of the other ones, mainly just out of a sense of I don't know what, you know, equal protection under the law, right? Everybody is treated the same way when they get banned.
And this is Dirk role-playing as a member of the Sisters of Eve. but I think that our Eve forced this. There's been a lot of complaints about botting supers and botting carriers, and hey, why isn't CCP doing anything about this? And so what CCP did was they brought these carriers and supers and a Titan into ULI in order to show, hey, look, yeah, we are actually doing things with this. We're not going to just quietly ban this guy that's bad at botting in a super. We'll let you kill him and show you that we're actually catching these people.
My only concern is that it feels like if this is all they're going to do, like if they're only going to do it this twice, this once, 1 week ever, like this is a drop in the bucket of botting, right? Like, and that's the concern I think many people have. It's like, why aren't we doing this every day? This was awesome. Like we know there's that level of botters that you could do this every day until they get wise, right? Like,
I mean, it's fun. I mean, it's fun to shoot supers and it's fun to shoot carriers and high sec, but shooting VNIs, is that going to be as much fun?
Yes.
Okay, that's number one. And number two, we need to tell our CSM members that hey, let CCP know, hey, look, we really want this to keep on going. If we could have a CSM member maybe on right now to do that.
They already know that it was very appreciated by the community.
Honestly, I think it'd be pretty awesome if they could like transport like 100 of the Gila bots or whatever in it like once. It'd be like a battle, botters versus people.
I'm going to laugh when a botter actually manages to kill someone, or don't they do some dev hacks to make it so they can't do that?
I think it would only be fair to let the bots fight back. Humans versus robots, man.
Well, I guess they would fight back if their bot program... maybe bot makers out there need to now, you know, put in a little extra thing. Hey, by the way, if you find yourself in ULI, start fighting back.
Well, no, but like with the VNIs and the Gilas, your drones are unaggressive, so they would automatically shoot back when somebody aggressed them. The supers, that's not the case.
Yeah, but the thing is, with the bots, if they see neutrals in local or they see reds in local, then they get their drones, they gather their
drones,
try to hide.
Yeah.
But you'd have to make the suspect timer last longer than 15 minutes, because I think it would take longer than 15 minutes to kill all the bots.
Or start trash talking like a human.
It would be fun to see them fighting back in ULI.
It seems as though people enjoyed that event. I mean, and this is Eve, right? Everybody's going to enjoy that sort of thing. It's just sort of the way Eve is. Public executions are like, you know, I don't know, probably something long overdue in Eve.
You know, it would be a good way for people to correct their kill boards by waiting for the bots to drop in, and then you kill them, and then therefore your kill board goes green.
Okay, at this time we need to say goodbye to Killaby so he can get back to the fun in Reykjavik. Thanks for joining us.
Yep, thanks. I'll talk to you guys next week, I guess.
And I see we also have a new guest who has arrived to say hello. Ladies and gentlemen, let me introduce to you Instinct, a Circle of Two fleet commander. Would you introduce yourself to the team?
Okay, good evening, gentlemen. So I am Instinct, as he said. Thanks to him for introducing me. I've been in an CO2 for about 3 years now, and FCing for them for two years and a half. So more or less 2 months.
Welcome.
And thank you. So this is my first time in talking in stations.
So have you been participating in the Northern War, as we're calling it?
Yes.
And tell us your thoughts. What's your perspective on how the war is changing, how it felt this week, or just anything you want to share with us about where you are right now on this war?
To start with, I would like to come back on the words that Krabi said earlier, and I totally agree on his words. So the war started very fast, with lots of blood, one Kipstar dead, by the way. And now it slowed down. We saw, that they started with rock calls dropping. They started again and continue to clocky camp to disrupt, do good fleet. We do also as well. Now summer is done. So the hard time of the war was summer for everyone, every alliance, because of course number in fleets drop. Now we can get back to good numbers in fleets. People come back from vacations, they have works, etc.
So excellent. How long have you been in CO2?
I've been in CO2 for 3 years.
So were you a part of the fight for CO2 when they left Tribute?
I was already an FC there, and I was FCing in this war.
Gotcha.
So he's been there long enough.
Indeed.
Is the question that you were asking?
Well, the question I'm getting to is, how has the tactics changed? How have the tactics changed? Because we're seeing a major part of this war, at least right now, is the use of cyanojammers to prevent movement, to prevent attacking certain strategic assets. Is that a major departure from what we've seen in the past? In your experience, what's it look like there, tactically speaking?
Well, the time has changed a lot in EVE Online over the past few years, notably about capital power in this game. So skill injectors changed a lot of things that permit everyone to get in capitals very quick, let's say it like this. So having lots of alts in capitals super titan. And so that brought up a total new, I will not say new, but better advantage of the use of cyanojammers. Because as we can see it right now, we can effectively disrupt the capital use of our enemies by playing well with cyanojammers.
So can you walk me through, you're disrupting the enemy use of capitals by doing this, but you're also, by the nature of cyanojammers, preventing your use of them, unless you're sort of cycling them on and off secretly and then moving capitals in or things like that. Especially given that now you can, for instance, sit a fax machine on top of an Entosiser and just rep the thing. Are we seeing cycling happen, the use of caps by the defending side and not the attacking side? Or is it just because of these cyanojammers, caps aren't being used?
Sometimes they are being cycled, of course, for the use of everyone, especially in our own alliance. Otherwise, that would be a nightmare for logistics. What I can say about it is we can prevent them from dropping their super capital fleet or capitals in every node everywhere. So that slows down the sovereignty warfare, if I can say it like that. On another note, if they really want to attack a system which is being jammed and that we can manage to keep jammed. And if they want to attack it with a capital fleet directly, they either need to destroy, incap the Sinojammer, or they need to do it through gates. And most likely, if they do it through gates, they will just end up in a huge ton of bubbles on each gate, plus dictors, etc. And so they need to play with subcapitals first. And if they manage to win with subcapitals, they can play with capitals afterward.
And we do see a lot of Sinocerl system jammers being killed. I mean, they're being killed every day. So there are subcapital fleets going out, and you know, I have seen capital fleets go out as well.
Yes.
I'm not sure how much super capital and capital fleets would be doing more if there weren't these jammers being online. But it's a little bit like in Dominion Sov when the sovereignty blockade units were a thing you had to go through first before you could go to the next phase. In this case, you have to go through a Sinocerl system jammer.
Yeah, I see our killboard of jammers is being shown. And yeah, as you can see, guys, every time a jammer is incapped, so it's either repaired or killed, whatever, as the mechanics wants it. And about these jammers and hiabs, most of the important in a strategic plan systems are still intact and are still unhit. Most of the hiabs that were killed are part of systems that are not really relevant to be considered as, let's say, strategic win. Most of them, some of them, of course, were.
I'll take a chance and talk here. Is this just a delaying tactic? Is the inevitable that the steamroll will come through the north eventually? Or is this a new way to break down fights into a different form that may not be advantages to people who have the most amount of titans?
It's a little bit both of them.
To some extent, every battle and every form of defense is either a delaying tactic or it's a defense, right? I mean, like, yeah, I'm not quite sure what you're asking because it is a delaying tactic if what you assume is that the inevitable is the inevitable. Otherwise, it's what you do to defend areas from just allowing the steamroller to Sino in.
Yeah, so Sinojammers are a tactical advantage given to the defenders. They've been around since 2010, and they have played a crucial role in the defense of countless regions for the last 8 or 9 years. They're no joke, and not only are they a delaying tactic, but it's important to remember that Sinojammers have quite literally won wars. You know, I personally remember in 2010 defending Deculin and Pureblind, funny enough, against a large NC Impale Supercat fleet that we had no ability to handle at the time with Sinojammers. And you couldn't gate through, take gates with Supercaps at the time, luckily. But the mechanics are much the same. If you deny the ability of your enemy to use their air superiority, I guess we could call it, and you force them to fight, you know, in the dirt, in the ground, it can level the playing field a lot. And that's one of the reasons why Sinojammers are such a interesting tactical advantage that commanders can play with.
That's such a good point and so interesting. I just wonder why wasn't that utilized before? I guess X-47 was a breach in that, right? Because they took Sov.
Correct.
Yeah, okay.
So the X-47 Keepstar was killed because they were in the process of transferring the Sov and they hadn't, you know, seen the invasion coming in early enough to predict that transfer needed to happen earlier. And so X-47 wasn't Sinojammed. And the decision to hit X-47 when the decision was made partly because there was no Sinojammer. And, you know, it's a pretty crucial factor. And, you know, much in the South, when we had the 4-attack GB timer, we had no Sinojammer. So it played a factor in that role. Sinojammers are one of the few really strong tactical advantage defenders get besides Tether. And it's hard to say that, you know, it won't play a factor, because it absolutely will play a factor in the way that this war goes.
The best benefit of... Sorry.
No, go ahead.
The best advantage of Sinojammers is that as a defender, you can create a window of attacks of your systems and your assets, of course. And you more or less submit your enemies to play in these windows. But when there are no jammers, your enemies can create their attacking windows, and that's the huge power they can get out of that.
So you're able to fight on your defensive terms better.
Are you talking more about the Entosis timers, like time zone tech nature, or?
Nothing about Entosis.
Well, Sino jammers can be attacked at any time of day or night. They don't have any vulnerability cycles.
Yes.
So you just have to go in there. Now, it gives you folks warning, because when it gets hit, they see, okay, someone's attacking the jammer in such and such a system. They're probably going to attack soon. So you get a little bit of a warning, but I don't know that you get boxed into a window. I'm not sure how that would work. I will point out, too, if you're a newer player and you're looking at the Z Killboard list of Sino-Cyril jammers, you might be scratching your head wondering, does it look like these people are killing their own jammers? And the reason is because each time the hostile fleet comes in, all they do is reinforce the jammer. They just want to damage it enough so that it no longer functions. They don't care about removing it. In fact, it's a little better if you don't remove it, because then they can just come by and drop a new one and turn it on. And then they just have to wait through the, I guess it's, is it an hour to online?
35 minutes.
35 minutes. Okay. 5 minutes to anchor, and then 30 minutes to online. So, but if you have to make them come and destroy the old one first, because you can only have one at a time, then it's a little bit more work for them. So generally you don't kill it.
Anyway. And we also have to remember that we're, you know, kind of now in the waning days, right, of Sinojammers operating the way that they are right now, that sometime we think by the end of the year that we are going to get the new upwell structures that will take over for jump bridges and Sinojammers and Sino beacons, right? And it will be interesting to see then, you know, how Sinojammer play comes into effect, and how, you know, right now, right, these things are still on pauses. They are still related to the iHub in the system. What's going to happen to the iHub, you know, in the future in terms of an administrative structure or something like that? What the gameplay is going to be like associated with that? So, you know, it's going to get interesting as time goes on this year, but we still don't know the details of how that's going to work.
Yeah, so to further elaborate on the mechanics of Sinojammers. So what happens is Sinojammers have 15 million armor hit points, which is a really nice kind of number, actually, in terms of the way it works. And to reinforce it, you have to kill that 15 million EHP. But past that, they have 100,000 hull EHP, which has a 99% resist. So it's easy to rep, but is pretty tanky as well. So 99% at 100,000 equals roughly, 100 million EHP. So if you want to kill the Sinojammer, you have to chew through 100 million EHP, which just takes a long time. And usually it's only done if you have a full supercap fleet there sitting around. And if you make your enemy reinforce it, generally what they do is they'll put any incapped POS guns on the jammer, and then they can just shoot it kind of AFK with a couple large guns, which do damage. And 3 or 4 hours later, they'll kill it, kind of thing. But the key point is that once a Sinojammer is reinforced, it opens up all kinds of play avenues in terms of your enemy has to come and rep it, which means forces them to put something on it, or they have to kill it, which means you can just incap the guns or kill what's trying to kill it. The Sinojammer is arguably one of the best designed solve mechanics I think that the game has, which is kind of funny to say.
Yeah, I mean, we're seeing it in action. It's really amazing, you know, how it shifts the balance. Am I still... Because it just seemed like there was an inevitable force that was coming towards the north, and the game couldn't handle it, and there was just all this doom and gloom about, is this what it's come to? You know, N plus one in supercaps and servers that can't handle the fights.
As much as that's true, I think there is another factor you guys aren't talking about, which is just the exhaustion of some of these fights. As much as X-47 and ULX and these were fun fights to be on the victor side, or arguably. And they were definitely not fun fights to be on the losing side of. They really aren't fun fights for anyone. And they're incredibly demanding on the commanders and the people that go on them. And even though I'm sure that, you know, everybody would love to, you know, jump in and kill 30 Titans once a week, I don't know if people are really ready to sign up for that once a week 20-hour tie-dye battle. You know, so I think that honestly, I kind of get the impression at times that the Imperium isn't pushing as hard as they could because they really don't see, you know, the cherry on top to reward them for doing it, if that kind of makes sense.
Well, it does, especially in the wake of what Reza said, who's the CEO of Waffles, and they broke off from PL. They were a corporation in PL. But before that, they were their own alliance. And now they're going back to being their own alliance. And the reason he stated was he just wasn't into these big fights that take forever. So it's kind of a fatigue of what you're speaking about now.
Yeah, I definitely think it's a factor because when I look at the way the theater is developing, like you can look at the timer board and see, you know, they've entosis one thing here. Like now there's two things reinforced, right? Obviously, they're not pushing as hard as they could be, especially this is a weekend, right? So if they really wanted to Friday, they could have made 10 timers and had 10 timers for Sunday kind of thing. But I don't think that they feel they need to push hard and make real progress because they're already, you know, just thoroughly destroying large chunks of the North's ability to conduct industrial activity by applying this heavy pressure, which they're not receiving in their own home space. So as much as, you know, Keepstars are really fun, easy checkpoints, I guess you could say, I don't think they are the long game that anyone is playing for at this point.
Yeah. Well, I think it's interesting. I think too that after, and maybe we can talk about this, Dirk, or not, but we just pulled up the Onen Keepstar and Onenen Keepstar. And part of making sure that was possible was negotiating with the Imperium on moving them in the first place instead of them getting destroyed. Because once you have all these Sinojammers in place, a lot of the pressure of destroying things went into low sec right through these Keepstars. You saw Shadow Cartel's Keepstar go down. You saw Kanaka, the Waffles Keepstar go down. And so the Mela and Onen and Keepstars were both marked for destruction. And maybe to keep people, you know, engaged in fights that probably wouldn't be as big, because they'd definitely be different nature in low sec. I think there'd be completely different fights than they have been having in null security space. But during those negotiations, it was kind of like, yeah, we need to take a rest. If you can move these, we won't destroy them kind of thing. Now, that's not what was said, but that was kind of what I gathered. They wouldn't mind taking a break from these big fights. So that was something that we could like have some kind of negotiations on too.
But even you were affected by, you know, even taking down of the Onen and Keepstar, you know, was affected by the fact of you needed to get a Titan in and around. And given where your Titan was, given where one of your Titans was, you really weren't able to use it. You really weren't able to get it to where it would have needed to have been because of the North being as Sinojammed as it is.
Yeah, it's Sinojammed for everybody, not just the Imperium coming in. It's Sinojammed for everybody else too. So getting my Erebus out of DO6 was nearly impossible without having CO2 cycle down for a half hour. So they can cycle down the gates. They can open the gates for you, but the gates are down for a half hour. So they have to be careful. And that would let you out. But when we were doing a lot of this organizing for the operation in Onenen, it was not a good time to have people contacted to cycle down these jammers. So we had to go to an alternative Titan that was way over in Mela, and that had to crawl all the way up. I think it went like 5 or 6 jumps. And that took a while, which compressed our timeline to get prepared. So we weren't completely sure we were going to be prepared. It was actually really exciting. And Dirk was part of that, along with my court mate, Desas, and January Valentine, who works here with us at TIS. The four of us were kind of doing this thing pretty much all day long, right?
Yeah, it was pretty much all day long since you waited till like basically the last. The last day, say, how can I get some things moved? And oh, by the way, do we have some freighters?
That wasn't the plan. We were on plan C. We were on plan C. But the reason it worked out and really became a low stress situation in retrospect is Asher put in a defensive fleet that really would have annihilated anybody that tried to take it. There was nobody who was going to get away with the Keep Star, but we didn't want to see it destroyed. So it was good to have security there to prevent it from, to intimidate everybody around. And we also were super secret, so nobody knew it was going to happen. I think there were only two people active in system that weren't part of the operation, right? But and we were going to talk about that a little bit, and there it is. There's not much to say. I will probably write it up in a detailed piece and talk about the negotiations and also the execution. But I think the takeaway for me was something Dirk said, which was like, hey, this was a lot of fun. Doing things with people, doing things of consequence with people is really what makes this game fun.
Well, I mean,
amen.
I think what I was saying was fun, okay, was the fact that, yes, that was an all-day sort of thing for, you know, like, you know, helping you get a Titan moved around the horn, right? And making sure that we had gotten, I mean, first we had to get freighters into LOSEC, right? So that it could be in a LOSEC system where that Titan could then bridge them into Onnenon, because Onnenon had been gate-camped just by locals for much of that day and things like that. But kind of just sitting around in comms and having the conversations and getting the job done and things like that, right? Up until game time. That was the part that was fun. When you're sitting around with kind of your buds and whatnot, and you're doing a thing, whatever that thing might be, you know, and hopefully you feel like you're achieving something along the way or whatever, but you know, it was that part of it, right? It was just sort of the sitting around doing something, trying to get it done. And then of course we got to game time that night. The Imperium fleet came in, led by Asher and everything. We were ready to go. We're sitting there, counting down the seconds and everything.
And they shot the Keep Star.
Well, I think by accident somebody shot the Keep Star. But ultimately,
you know what goons remind me of? They remind me of the Tasmanian Devil. Like they're coming in and all this stuff's flying all over the place. And whether they're your friend or not. Fair. Stuff's getting ripped up.
I mean, I don't know. But, maybe it was so OPSEC on their thing that they thought they were jumping into shoots.
We didn't know what we were doing. I was in that fleet under Asher, and we didn't know what we were doing. They didn't tell. They just said, go here, go there, do this, do that. Stop shooting the Keep Star and don't shoot the freighters. Like, and I'm looking around, freighters, what? Really? Okay, all right, let's not shoot the freighters. Oh, I know what we're doing,
We get the freighters in there and everything. I'd given a bookmark to Asher so that they'd know where to land and stuff like that off of the Keep Star and whatnot. We get the freighters in right the time we should have. I mean, because you had a great timer for counting that down, and we were launching freighters at the right time. And then we get there, and none of the three freighters could pick up the unanchored Keep Star. And we're sitting there, and it's like, and we were in the Imperium fleet, and we're reading what they're, and they're like, what the hell's going on? But I'm going, oh my God, we look like we can't even pick up an unanchored Keep Star. But there was something going on there. As Tuzzy said, a bug can happen. We had a freighter log off and log back in, still couldn't do it. We had another one who tried to, then we had another one that went and docked back up and came back out. And then he could automatically pick it up. And it was just like, we have no idea why it happened. Carneros, you came up with what you thought might be a possibility for it.
Yeah, the thing that I thought it might be was that it might be an invisible timer still from having been shot that had persisted after it unanchored, but there was no user interface display factor for it, but it was still being unavailable for that reason.
It didn't matter anyway, because I think the cover from Asher was so good that there was nobody that was going to take that thing. So we felt kind of relaxed, although it felt a little silly.
Yeah. And no, it wasn't a factor of whether or not that Keep Star was going to be lost or get into the hands of somebody else or something like that. Right. But forget the defense fleet that you had been able to arrange to be there. Right. Think about this from any other entity out there, small or large or whatever, in a contested situation. You're there. you're going to pick up this thing. Why won't it pick up? And the lack of understanding of why it won't pick up, why it won't scoop.
Yeah, nobody knew why. That was a little distressing. There was like three or four theories. One was the one that Carnero said. Another one was the first person to touch the other package, because there's two packages that drop, is the one that could pick up the Keep Star. And there's other stuff about
Before he picked up the other package that had some random items in it or whatever, he tried to pick up the Keep Star first, couldn't do that, and then picked up the other package. So even that, he was the first one to lay hands on the unanchored Keep Star, and it's still bugged for him. So, and we say bugged only because we don't have really another word for it, given a lack of understanding of why it would happen.
If Tuzzy doesn't know, because during this, we're like, this is not working out. Let's get an expert in here. So Tuzzy was able to get into our Discord, and he's like, yep, it's a bug. It's like, okay.
Yeah, it's a pretty common.
Is it? Do you know about it too?
Yeah, so we unanchored like 40 faction forts in Faith, and we had it maybe 10%, 20% of the time.
Oh, okay. So it's just, okay. So you don't know what triggers it yet.
Just some random bug. There's no way to tell what. Our best guess is that people being on grid with it as it's unanchoring somehow causes it to unanchor in the wrong position and triggers a server issue or something.
Maybe it's just a hidden variable CCP has in there to create
conflict.
Gameplay or something.
Yeah.
The only time we observed it was when someone was already preloaded on grid, so that's our best guess. But
There's a lot at stake. When it's a keep store, when it's a different structure, it's not as big.
I push back on that one, actually, Matterall. I wanted to say your comments about how fun it was, and Dirk as well, just on comms, making this plan, figuring out how it would happen. The stakes were high for you because you have the wealth such that dropping an Astor House doesn't matter, give or take. But for the vast majority of EU players who don't have the cash to donate Keep Stars to your Sanctuary Keep Star project, even just like getting your small corp together and anchoring an Astor House in a wormhole, making a plan to do that, doing smaller things on a smaller scale, they are just as exciting. That's why a lot of people play EU, is because you can have those experiences, and it doesn't have to be a Keep Star. Like, this past week, I was planning for the defense of the Capitalist Army Asbel and NTAC 6, and we had exactly the same experience. It was completely enthralling, and it doesn't have to be a Keep Star. You can have these experiences. It just has to be valuable to you. It doesn't have to be 140 billion worth of Keep Star.
Oh, I totally agree with that. And I meant that for us, since we've been around a long time, the Keep Star put the pressure up high enough to care a lot about it. But I think people who are newer to the game can certainly care. It just depends on what you care about, what's valuable to you, and it's totally different for different players. But you're absolutely right. If you care about it and you're working together to do it, it's a really good feeling.
Yeah, I mean, we cared about each one of the, you know, we had backup freighters, right? But we cared about each one of those billion-esque freighters that we were, I mean, like, not like if we lost one, we couldn't go buy another one, but we didn't want to lose one. Yeah, you know, it doesn't matter that the Keep Star was the end result here, right? There are a lot of things in between where it's like, you know, this is what the normal day-to-day is for a lot of players across EVE in terms of just regular logistics and things like that. You know, people say moving a Titan through Nullsec, even friendly Nullsec, is easy, right? It's not. I mean, they've changed it. Like, if you're the lone guy, believe me, you don't necessarily want to be that guy that says, oh, shit, you know what? I didn't take this seriously, and now I'm caught out. Can somebody rescue me?
This guy wants to be in a corp with you, Artemis. He thinks you're a good leader there, Prince Paradox.
So, I am not the leader. Talk to Alexei of Card.
But where are you from?
Capitalist Army. Just search for that. It will get you sorted.
It's, I think, down there in Scotland.
We're down in Great Wildlands at the moment. We just finished one war, an alliance dissolved and had a coup, and now it looks like we're going to start another war.
Capitalist Army putting the great back in Great Wildlands.
We're going to steal that.
But yeah, anyways, it was a fun adventure. I know that there are people out there that are asking where Matterall is going to set this thing up. It's going to be an obscure place that is not that doesn't make anybody feel as though it's a threat or that it's anything that they want to go shoot just because it exists on day one or something like that. So he's going to get himself somewhere at some point in time.
Could happen.
And there goes his connection.
Within the next
He's setting it up in perimeter. No, he's not horrendous. Well, you can't have keep stars in high sec, but
really?
You put can it off the ETS or something. I don't know.
Quick question for the panel. Can you really not keep stars in high sec?
Well, hold on. I thought
you can. You can. Thing is, if you put the keep star in high sec, like in perimeter, then the high sec then people like Gobbins might get upset and then shoot it. And then for like you null sec types, it's harder to come in and reinforce it and stuff.
Or defend it. My bad. I thought that you could. I thought that was a decision that they had made a long time ago just because of what you have to go through to, to kill structures in high sec compared to elsewhere. But obviously you can't doomsday, which, Well, there you go, Matterall. Perimeter.
That's already over.
We lost your audio again, Matterall.
It was a good few minutes, I will say.
Yeah. But yeah, at some point in the future, don't look for it anytime soon. It will go someplace under some sanctuary thing that Matterall will write about at a later time or talk about at a later time.
In the meantime, get your son to help you fix your connection.
It's probably him back. It's probably him grabbing all the bandwidth or something.
You guys are so funny.
Fortnite ripping into it.
Yeah. All right, let's wrap up the show if you can.
Yeah,
I'd like to say thank you to all the people who have helped on this production, the panelists, the special guests, the producers behind the scene, McLeod, who keeps all the buttons running. Thank you to our Patreon supporters and our angel investors or whatever they're called.
And we just lost Matterall from video, so that's probably done something fun and interesting to the
audience. No, I'm trying to see if that helps.
Gotcha. I just want to announce, make mention to everybody out there that's listening. Next week, big week on Talking in Stations, we have got the new creative director, CCP Berger, coming on, and the new executive producer, CCP Manbjorn, coming on. So we will talk to them for what I think may be the first time for any of the shows out there.
And if you really don't care about what they have to say, show up for the first 5 minutes and listen to Matterall butcher the name.
Manbjorn.
Yeah. I'll say man bun or something. All right, guys.
Vander pig.
Billy, thanks for sticking around. Noisy Gamer, thanks for coming by and giving us some security information. And thanks to Killer B, who's at CSM Summit in Iceland. He was here earlier. Thank him for coming around. And Instinct from CO2, it's nice to meet you.
Yep, same thing. It's my pleasure.
All right, guys. Carneros, Artemis, Dirk, you got anything else?
Thank you. Not long till eVegas.
Yeah. All right. Sorry about my connection. I was able to come and go, but you guys handled the show great. I can be a fan now and listen to it myself. Thanks, everyone, for watching this Sunday. We will see you next week on Talking in Stations.